going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, get your wallets ready and your credit cards strapped down. It's time for another episode of WTF Prime Time! Joining me today is Gog Dog.
Yay, I'm first again.
And also joining us today again is Aaron.
That makes me last again.
Oh. If it helps, I introduced myself first. I was about to say I was committing the ultimate sacrifice and going last, but I guess I wasn't.
But you're the one that talks first every time.
Yeah. Why would that even occur to you when it's exactly the opposite?
Because, you know, sometimes we live in a confusing world where you gotta take people you trust at face value. That's all I'm trying to say here. Also, I just want to say something. I hope you guys don't mind my language. We're going to be talking about the episode of Prime called Crossfire, and I didn't think I'd say this until another season finale, but guys, holy shit! I'm gonna fix it up, don't worry.
Oh, like last time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like last to keep time. You on your toes. Holy f***ing shit!
I know. So, I'll just say it right up front, because it was something I looked for, and it was also pointed out to me. This was another episode written by Uncle Marty Eisenberg.
Yay!
So we got Marty just kind of like stomping all into Prime, just going like, hey, what's up, guys? I'm real good at writing cartoons. Here, have another one. It was a pretty neat episode. Lots of stuff happened in this episode. For an episode with such a quiet and unassuming name like Crossfire, that was a lot of events to take place all at once. So to start off, I guess let's open up with the big one, and the one that I didn't get told about before the episode, maybe because I'm just really good at dodging. I will say, I was on the bus heading up to HeCon and the 80s Toy Expo this weekend, and I was checking my Twitter now and then, waiting for all these just different stupid buses and the YRT lines to get me up to Richmond Hill, and apparently there was just some grand brain failure of communication whereby, worse than before, people were apparently just like hawking either spoilers or it's not a spoiler, but it'll make you think. Because, you know, it's not spoiling if I just say, man, I can't believe that something happened. Apparently Twitter was just no man's land this weekend. So come on, guys, let's tighten up. Let's tighten our belts a little bit here. Don't get sloppy. All right? Twitter is not the only way to communicate. There are these things called instant messaging programs. I used one once when I was young. It was called ICQ. Surely there are more advanced versions of ICQ out there for us all to use. So we don't have to sit on Twitter filling up people's feeds with almost discussions about almost spoilers of almost episodes. Because guess what happened in this episode? Breakdown got himself riggedy wrecked. And I am curious if that was some terminal riggedy wreckedness, or if we might be seeing him again at some point, given the nature of the last moment he was in the episode. So, Gog, were you expecting that to happen at all?
I was not. I was fortunate enough to watch this before crazy ass spoilers started hitting Twitter. Seriously, guys, like you really need to think. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
but
yeah, that's the thing. I'm not here calling anyone. Nobody's dumb. Okay, nobody's stupid. I'm not insulting anyone. Just tighten up your belts. Okay,
thread spoilers galore on TFW.
Saul Fury had to make a new sticky. He was like, guys. Making the breakdown
and then
memorial
there's people
thread.
There's people defending it, saying it's not my responsibility that you're getting spoiled. It's yours. Like what?
No, they show anyway, they show up on the front page of the boards. Come on, you make the breakdown memorial thread. Don't try to tell me that that's not a spoiler. All right.
Yeah. He's a good character,
thinking minds that we all have. You know.
Yeah. So, but anyway, yeah. The minute he had his hand stuck in the trap that she made. I was like, then when we saw his arm no longer attached as the camera panned down when the mech soldier wandered upon his body, I said, I'm not gonna lie. Like, the way the camera panned up and then down... And then kind of over to the side, the mech guy's like, yeah, it's this, this op has wielded unexpected results and a familiar face. That scene was unnerving to me. I'm not going to lie. It was, I felt a little chill. I'm like, yeah, that's what we know of Transformers. Unless something crazy happens, Breakdown is dead.
Yeah, not just dead. He was like, I actually paused the frame to just take a look at the damage. His arm was severed. You see later, his head is off, and his body is not in one piece, lying on the ground.
No, it's not. And yeah. There's lots of people that are taking the stance of this was the workings of the Insecticon that we see later. I don't know if there was any definite proof of that, though. And I can totally understand where that came from, but we see Arachnid take a slash right at his face.
She at least was responsible for the arm.
Right. I don't know. I think the jury is still out on that, unless there's something that I missed, like some fang Insecticon fang marks or something on the body that I didn't see. But it's totally a valid theory. I'm not discounting it. I think the wiki has already posted that as fact. Like, the Insecticon did it. So I'm curious to see where they based that claim, or if it was just somebody that kind of threw that up to have the first edit or something. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but I didn't get the impression that that was the workings of the Insecticon. I got the impression of it was Breakdown stuck in a trap, and Arachnid had time to have her way and make a point of saying, this is what happens when you try to stab me in the back, even though it was totally what she was going to do.
Right.
The sad part about this whole thing, and it makes it even more unnerving to me and yet still kind of awesome, is like Breakdown was the one that was totally admitting to the other Decepticons that he kind of had the hots for her.
Yeah.
that is wrong, man. Like, that is just some layers of icky. Like, like, this dude kind of had a bit of a crush on her, and she literally dismembers him to death and beheads him and leaves his corpse in the woods, never to function again. Like, that is
the spider
like
a thing to do, though,
some
isn't
dark,
it?
Yeah, that is some darkness. And I got more enjoyment out of that scene the second time, but I'm not going to lie, the first time I watched it, I was like, wow.
No, I was like, wait, what? And at first I was like, well, maybe I'm seeing, and then they showed the severed head, and I was like, okay, holy, all right. Aaron, about you? How'd you take, did you get spoiled at all? I did not get spoiled. Gog did not get spoiled.
I managed to, even though my DVR didn't properly record it, I got 30 minutes of black.
Oh, good.
I apparently wasn't following the two or three people that were being really bad about spoilers and wasn't on TFW at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But due to other people's reactions, I'd kind of sussed out that somebody had bit it and then just went, okay, Twitter's going away until I can get a download and watch it through. So I knew somebody was biting it. And that was about it.
The only thing I saw before the episode was someone saying, "Wow, Prime, wow." So I thought, like, "Oh, maybe there's like a big reveal or something, or they're gonna have the 13 show up." And I was like, "Oh no, they're just gonna friggin' murder somebody."
Yeah.
All right?
And then the really oddball thing to me was the fact it was a first act.
Yeah, that also made me pause because I was like, "What tone
is this?" They didn't use it as the dramatic apex. They used it to, this is the tone we're going to set for the rest of the episode. And I'm not going to lie, there, and we'll get into that more, but there were several times in this episode where I can probably count at least three or four more times where a character came extremely close to dying, and I'm like, is this what they're doing for this episode? Because if they opened with Breakdown, what are they going to end with? And
yes, this, like, episode was originally titled Everybody Dies.
And, like, I'm not going to lie, by the time we got to where the credits were rolling, like, my heart was beating a little more than usual. And that's the first time that's ever happened with me in this show.
Yeah.
But my heart was going a little bit. I'm like, okay, what's going to happen here? Because are some characters that I've grown to like, is this the last time I'm going to see him?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That was a really, like, and speaking of someone who is, like, I am certainly, you know, I'm not saying, oh, good, they got rid of Breakdown. I saw some reactions, people going like, yeah, well, Breakdown wasn't all that important anyway. Like, if this is the last we see of Breakdown, that'll bum me out a little bit in the long term, because
yeah.
I like the voice actor, I like the character design, and I think that he did have places to go as a character still.
Oh, so for sure.
It would be, to me, very odd for this to be the way that they finish the character off in the show. So I got to see how this plays out, of course.
Well, that's the person I feel sorry for is Mirai. I think that's how you pronounce her screen name, where she's building that costume.
Yeah.
And is almost done with that costume. And then I guess she got heavily spoiled about what was going on.
Oh, so she was pissed.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so now it's a memorial costume, maybe. Yeah. For this character that I guess she's put like 4 months or 3 months
and
or something.
We've got the toy coming soon.
But I mean, we got a Cliff Jumper toy way after he was dead.
Oh,
so.
We got like four Cliff Jumper toys way after that.
Maybe Breakdown will pull like a NECA, NECA Necromorph and have like removable limb action.
Oh man, that would be hilarious. Like if they ball joint all his limbs, that'd be so funny.
But
in a really gross way.
No, I hope at least for the character that Mech does something substantial with it where the Insecticon's lights went out though when he was beheaded, so I don't know if there's a chance that like Mech rebuilds the parts and he comes back.
I have a theory to drop, but it's at the end when we talk about the trailer for the next episode, and I don't want to say it right now.
Okay.
But also, I'll expand on the theory right now. Mech is the group that found him shortly after he was ripped up. And that, to me, was communicating a possibility. If anyone is going to cause Breakdown to survive this, it would be Mech.
Right.
Yes, and that thought did occur to me, and I think that's on the table. But, I mean, given... if that happens, that's going to be a first for this show, because, like, previously, when a Transformers life sign goes out, like they have, the people who witnessed that life sign dying have expressed no hope. Like in the opening episode, the very first episode, when Cliff Jumper died, Ratchet said, yeah, we saw his signal fade. They didn't even try to look for him. They knew he was dead.
Yeah.
When Megatron saw Breakdown signal dying, very first thing he said is like, well, we better go get his corpse. He's dead. There's no doubt in anybody's mind that what the readings that they received were not a 100% sign of death. So if Mech, for some reason, finds a way to revive him, then they are doing something that Cybertronians themselves are not aware of being possible. The other situation I'm thinking of is, what if we get a Dinobot 2 situation? It's not really Breakdown, but it's kind of Breakdown. Maybe he's got some of the memories, but he's more of a shell of what he was. I think
that could be really interesting, kind of the whole Frankenstein's monster thing.
Remember what these guys have been referred to as. Or indirectly referred to as ghouls, right?
Right.
Like, you lay that in there, too. And that is why I'm okay with this happening, because the fact that Mech showed up immediately and then his body vanished...
Yeah.
Is like, it's so rife for discussion. Maybe in the long term, this will end up being a crappy move, but right now, it really has me like kind of just jazzed. I'm like, okay, you've got my damn attention in like what, just a few episodes into your second season. Here we go. Let's do this. Remind me to share my theory at the end, just in case I forget. I have this theory. That's really, I think, among the big moments in this episode, I think that was the first and foremost moment. I mean, in part because it's in Act 1, but also just because that was the shocker. That was the thing that, thank goodness, I didn't hear about. Do you know what I did on Twitter? I actually tried something a little bit sneaky, I'm going to admit right now. After I watched the episode, I made a tweet implying that I made a tweet where I celebrated not having been spoiled and implied that I was about to watch the episode. Mm-hmm. And I did that to see if someone was going to try to spoil me at the last minute, but nobody did. So good on you guys. Doing a good job. Yeah. Let's move on from there, because we got a lot to talk about in this, I think. Gog, what's another moment you'd like to bring up from this episode?
Well, let's go into Starscream.
Yeah.
How about that?
Poor dude.
Yeah. I get, yeah, there's a lot to, there's so much to talk about in this episode, but, so, I don't know, I guess talking about things in broad strokes in this, for this discussion is probably not necessarily a bad thing, but, so yeah, we see Starscream, still not able to transform, kind of picking off Energon goodies from the scraps left over from an abandoned Decepticon Energon mine.
Yeah.
Sees the Insecticon. I guess we can make... I don't know. I guess the Insecticon itself is not really worthy of its own segment. But so the first thing that really intrigued me here was Starscream having no idea how or why there is an Insecticon on Earth. And that's a theme that came up again later with Arachnid. She had no idea that those things had existed either. And that kind of tells me that the whole breakdown thing wasn't really the Insecticon, because she seemed to stumble upon him, and she even made the comment of, like, when she finds the other ones later, like, oh, you were just a scout. That tells me that that thing was just kind of out there in the cave, so when she retreated, she found it, but I don't know. Like I said, there's no real evidence.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we see Starscream trying to give it orders. It's obviously not listening because Arachnid
it completely ignored him too.
Yeah.
Well, was it Arachnid? Did Arachnid have him under his thrall then, or was it just it didn't see Starscream?
It did nothing until Starscream hit it.
Well, no. It was digging for Energon, but it took the Energon directly back to Arachnid, who then she thanked it for. That tells me that it was gathering it for her. It was already under her control. And I assume that it was because it was under her control was the reason why it wasn't obeying Starscream and then later Megatron. Because both of them were very shocked that it was not obeying direct orders based on their, in Starscream's words, superior being. Mm-hmm. Like, it has some base level programming to just obey normal sentient Decepticons.
Yeah.
So that didn't really go as planned. He gives his little, let's team up. And that's becoming a new theme with Starscream. Like, he's like, hey, Mech, let's team up. Oh, I'm going to screw you. Hey, Arachnid, let's team up. Okay. That lasts all of about 30 seconds.
This is another one of those times where I feel like they're listening to the podcast, because I expressed a small worry that Starscream would just team up with somebody to form a third faction.
Yeah.
And now he tries to team up with them, and within the same episode gets backstabbed and left for dead somewhere.
Yeah.
So
yeah. then we go to what I think is the funniest episode or funniest moment in this episode is basically word for word Starscream repeating the distress call that he gave in Orion Pax Part 2.
Yep.
And here comes Ratchet and Bulkhead once again, like, showing up. Like,
I love and Starscream, send medical help at the end of his message.
I know, but it was like word for word the exact same message. And then Ratchet and Bulkhead both look at each other. They're like, here we go again. And they show up, and he's in the same position, leaning against a rock, like, bleeding out of the same leg. And it's Ratchet is just like, what are you doing?
Yeah. It's like, whenever they hear from Starscream, and Starscream is like, I got some info for you. By the way, somebody just gutted me, and I'm going to be dead in about half an hour. Please come and help, and I'll tell you things.
I thought this was brilliant, especially the fact that, because this was a completely different writer, but this was Marty Eisenberg taking a moment from a previous episode and completely building upon it and making it like a thing. And who knows if that was meant to be that way from the beginning, or him just taking something that came before and completely turning it into something bigger. And I love that. Because it would be funny if it was the same writer, like, kind of sticking with their own little in-joke. But this is another writer taking what that writer previously did to him and running with it. And that's genius. But, like, that whole thing, like, just basically... And the scene played out the same way. Like, what information you got? Oh, this is what I got. Okay, yeah, whatever, Starscream, we're going to leave. And then he accidentally, once again, drops that bit of information that he doesn't know is important. And they're like, wait, what? And so just the mirror image of what had come before it, I thought was just absolutely brilliant. We see, I guess we can save some of the other stuff like the ending for later, but the other thing too is because like we see him with Megatron when he's talking about Megatron, because he's like, she means to challenge like he's about to say Megatron. He's like mankind. And I this comes up later with Optimus Prime, but like what I got of that was the only reason why he didn't mention Megatron was because he knew that the Autobots wouldn't care if Arachne and Megatron are fighting. Like they're just going to let them kill themselves off. That doesn't affect us. So, like, that's the only reason why he was deceitful there. He's like, mankind, yeah, like, you guys protect mankind, right? Well, she's going to challenge, like, all of mankind. So go do that, because that's important information, and I need that medical kit. I think Optimus insinuated from that later that Starscream was, in his mind, like, setting up this trap for, like, them to have this big clash and destroy each other. And they all were like, yeah, I can't, Bulkhead's like, I can't believe I fell for that. But the reason why I absolutely think that that wasn't true and them just jumping to conclusions about the whole thing is what happens at the end when Starscream saves RC. If Starscream was literally setting that up to let them kill each other, why would he have let Arachnid not kill RC? I mean, other than here's the opportunity for me to shoot her in the back and I'm going to scare her away. But if he wanted the Autobots dead so badly, why would he have set her free out of an IOU-1 type of situation? I think
part of that could come from the fact that Starscream at this point realizes that maybe he can't necessarily burn all of his bridges.
Absolutely. I think that's true. I think it's at this point, he needs all the friends he can get. And two times now in this season, he's been left for dead and would have died. And it's been the Autobots who have saved him. There's no reason for him to kill them yet. I mean, yeah, when he gets his strength back, when he gets his TCOG, when he finds a long-term source of Energon or medical supplies or somebody he can team up with. But there's no reason for him to take the Autobots out. They've saved his life twice. And that I think that is his mindset because he freed RC. He's not trying to make enemies with the Autobots. I mean, yeah, I mean, he kind of screwed Bumblebee over, but he seemed to have learned something from that in this episode, hopefully. So
Keeping the Starscream first mentality going. And absolutely. In that case, that was the best plan for Starscream was to not make enemies.
Right. But, like, I think Optimus's dialogue there where he's like, yeah, Starscream screwed us over. He set this whole thing up and everybody kind of jump into that conclusion. I think that was them jumping to a false conclusion because his actions directly after that state completely otherwise.
Yeah.
But I thought Starscream in this episode beginning to end was terrific. And I'm actually for as treacherous as he is, he's nowhere near a protagonist of any sort except for in his own mind. But I'm kind of starting to feel sorry for him. I mean, granted that would probably all go away once he gets himself in a position of power where he can become ambitious again, but the situation that he's in, I'm like, I feel for you, regardless of who you are.
It's all thanks to the voicing, I think. Just like the fact that, like, in Steve Bloom's performance, like, when Starscream is frightened, he sounds, like, when he gets frightened for his life, he sounds legitimately terrified.
Yeah, it's that tremble.
It's fantastic.
And they're keeping up that character trait of when Starscream is at his most emotional, he's not being deceitful. Like, he's on the ground. He's like, look, I lost my transformation cog. Like, why would he tell him that? Like, that just made him look even weaker. He's like, look, I have no friends. Everyone's left me to die. The only thing I want is for you to just give me the chance to not die here alone in this field. Like, I have nothing to lose. And it's that thing that we've talked about time and time again with Starscream is when he is at his bottom, he's not lying. He's not deceitful. He's opening his heart. Even though he's a slime bag, everything that comes out of his mouth when he gets in that mindset is he's spouting the truth, as pathetic as it is. And I love that they seem to keep hitting that tone with Starscream.
Well,
it's accentuated with the voice acting for sure, but the voice actor's not doing the writing. I'm glad that that's a theme that continues to come up with Starscream through multiple writers.
Yeah, and I mean, what I mean is like that's a thing where it cruxes on the voicing to get it across properly. Yeah. In a way that you can't misinterpret.
I'm saying it's a combination of consistent writing across the writers and amazing performances by Steve Blum, for sure.
And I think that what I mean by the risk that I mentioned just a bit earlier is that I think that it's great that they have managed to make Starscream still be a threatening force when he needs to be, even though he's also been... at times, the most pathetic character in the show. And I don't mean that in, like, a meta sense. I mean that, like, literally. He is the character who has been, at his worst, openly, without the show trying to cover for him in any way, shape, or form, trying to make it look badass or romanticize it. It's just, he's like, this cowering dude bleeding out of his femoral artery. Like, just saying, like, could you please not let me die, because I'll tell you stuff that you might already know. And I love it. Like, they aren't trying to make you like him, and I think that's helping me like him even more. And also, I was not sure what he was going to do with RC at the end. That was a big, like I think that setting the tone with Breakdown's dismantling really made that moment with RC where Starscream get, like, you know, clawing up his fingers. I was like, well, what's he going to do?
Yeah. Well, even before that, I was nervous for RC, like Cog was saying. You know, it was a 1-2 punch, because I was also in the train of thought thinking, well, Starscream might take this opportunity to at least mess her up. You know, they're not going to get rid of RC off the set. They can't do that.
I thought he was just going to do some, you know, open field surgery and just go, like, give me your T-Cog.
Yeah.
Something horrible like that. But, Starscream is as always... real star player in the cast of the show. And I'm glad that he is being a star player and a wonderful thing to see in season two, like, regularly. Because I thought that he might take a break in season two, and he totally hasn't. He has not been on the benches.
Yeah.
Aaron, what's the thing you'd like to bring up?
They did a really good job in this episode of showing again how rough and tumble Megatron is.
Yes.
And the fact that he has not just like he's good at combat, but that he has glee to be doing what he is, with him going up against the Insecticon. Now, granted, I think they used the same line or a similar line a couple of times about being a gladiator from Kaon, but just the way that it was... It went from being, because it's like every other time, it seems like, at least now, it's like he's flown in, he shot his gun, he's roughed up a dude, all right, we're done with that. But against this Insecticon, you just see him just grinning and loving the surprise, you know, oh, I'm not just going to go, you know, kill Arachnid, because, I mean, pfft, whatever, I normally, you know, I normally take joy in this, but isn't that one of the lines? Normally it's something I enjoy doing, but I'm letting you guys do this instead to begin the episode, and then just seeing him just up until the point of exhaustion to finally take down that Insecticon. He is just in it and taking him apart. And I mean, I think it was the scene where he like grabs those middle arms, leans back, rips them off, and just gets into dissecting this thing. And it did a really good job of showing, you know, how much Megatron just loves that. And then also at the same time showing how bad these Insecticons are for the great reveal at the very end of how much trouble we might be in soon. But just that it took everything that Megatron had to the point of falling down exhausted and completely helpless, or, you know, helpless to some point at the end of that fight with one, that it was really enjoyable to see that it wasn't just God mode. Megatron walks in and goes, oh, this, all right, whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I was trying to go and find the line you were talking about, but I couldn't pinpoint it off the top of my head.
Yeah, I was slowly panning around.
I'm also panning around because I distinctly remember Frank Welker doing one line as Megatron this episode that I thought was just like a pitch-perfect, fantastic delivery. But amongst all his lines, I don't remember which one it was. So I've been doing a bit of scrolling. But I really enjoyed Megatron in this episode as well.
Yeah.
In part for the way that he basically... I liked the kind of the quiet mafioso way he was all like... I think that you're going to do a good job taking Arachnid's place. Dredden's all like, but that's Arachnid's job. He's like, yeah, she'll be sorely missed. You know,
yeah.
I was like, oh man, cold. And I like that he goes in there and this Insecticon shows up and he just like rips the thing apart pretty much.
Yeah. Well, it was quite a fight.
It was an even-handed fight. But the way that he finishes the fight is just by like, I'm going to rip your arms off and cut your head off. I'm Megatron, fool.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, but like, I mean, granted, that Insecticon did take him by surprise, but like that first, he did say, he's like, I'm Megatron, and like mid line, the Insecticon grabs him by the head and just throws him against the wall. Yeah. And Megatron, like I said, he was definitely at a bit of a disadvantage. Arachnid definitely gave a tactical use of her web shooter in disabling both his cannon and his blade for a time. So Megatron was basically kind of limited to hand-to-hand combat, and did get kind of sucker punched there in the beginning. But even so, like we've seen Megatron, what he's capable of. He's taken on all four of the Autobots minus Prime and didn't get so much as a scratch on him, and this Insecticon, granted with a sucker punch, was able to bring Megatron down with his knees. Megatron won. He was not even able to walk afterwards, and that was nuts. We haven't seen Megatron like that since he went with Prime, but Prime was full of righteous vengeance. This was just a machine, a killing machine that he was going up against. It wasn't no epic mythical battle here. It was just this is something that's going to tear you apart.
And I think that's why I like the fight so much, is because like Megatron at no point in the entire fight, like I think I like that his emotion for this fight scene was just anger. And I found the line I was talking about. You actually reminded me. It's when the thing like cuts him off. The way that Frank Welker delivers this, like, I said bow line, like, the way he starts snarling it, I was like, and then the thing grabs him and chucks him, and then he just, like, glares at it. I was like, all right, I'm gonna enjoy this scene. Because it's just Megatron going like, oh, well, you're not going to listen to me. Now I'm not happy anymore.
Yeah.
And it's great. I love how, even though this thing is a killing machine, it wears him down, as you said, to the last vestiges of his strength. I love that at no point did I think Megatron would ever lose the fight to the Insecticon. I love the way that the show and Frank Welker are making this Megatron such a wonderfully menacing presence that you almost go like, wow, brainless Insecticon thing, you shouldn't have done that. It was really cool. And then the Insecticon, it transformed again in this episode. I'm calling it. We're going to see a toy of this thing by the end of the line, I'm pretty sure.
It would not surprise me at all. Especially to get something animalistic in there.
So it'll be one per case, and...
this will be the one that gets four in a case.
Oh, no, because this is the one that you want to own, like, 15 of.
Yeah, how cool would it be if we got a Voyager? I know that's probably never going to happen, but...
Oh, my God.
That thing is big. It needs a Voyager-sized class.
Can you imagine a Voyager wave where it's just, like, three Insecticons and some Optimus Prime repaint? Like, hey, Robot Kingdom, I'll just buy, like, three cases if that's okay with you. I'm enjoying that thing. And definitely that little bit at the end there showing... that for whatever reason, there are a billion Insecticon eggs chilling out inside the crust. I'm going to segue off that. This is kind of the same topic. Not the same topic, but this is directly segueing out of here. Between there being all those Insecticon eggs that deep in the earth and Arachnid's really, really weirdly cryptic line about how she and the Insecticon have something in common, which may have just been that they have buggish alt modes.
But yeah,
the way she delivered the line and the fact that she was able to like over, like, to take full control of them, regardless of the algorithms or whatever that are built into their feeble little heads. I want to know what's going on, because that's the kind of, like, this may just be a case of the famous Beast Wars line of Tarantulas possibly saying he's related to Unicron, but possibly just dropping some slang. It might just be that, where, you know, this isn't going to go anywhere. But right. It was all cryptic enough, and then I'm thinking, like, why would there be so many Insecticons under the Earth? Like, now, granted, something might have crashed there, but the Earth was also made of Unicron. Maybe these things are, like, things that grow inside of just, like, you know, cybernetic caverns or something. Like,
yeah,
that,
I don't know.
That a mama,
I
mean, Insecticon got here at some point and ate the Unicron juice.
I'm certainly not going to, like, go in telling everyone, like, I'm going to come up with some fantastical situation and that's got to be how it is. But I'm like, there are options here that I'm seeing. Some of them, you know, far less likely than others. But there were enough cryptic lines and situations for me to just sit there scratching my head going, like, the number of things in this episode that are, like, purely speculative conversation in a way that I don't find very annoying is awesome. Like, just all these little things they're just throwing down of, like, hey, here, have this too. Like, I admit, like, there is always the fear that they won't follow up on every thread they just threw down in this episode alone. But nonetheless, like, the potential for it I find really, really interesting.
Yeah, well, and I kind of think that that's a good sign of an episode, that he's put enough hooks in everything so that if somebody wanted to go with something one way versus another way, that could be done and have the basis of it be in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's not just, you know, he's not just writing this episode to be a lead on for his next episode, but it can be a lead on for two or three different ways, you know, between Breakdown and Arachnid with all of these dudes to be her minions and make that our potential third faction. Or,
well, no, it's not a third faction at this point, it's a fifth faction. You have Autobots, Decepticons, Mech, Starscream, and now Arachnid.
Well, at this point, though, is Starscream even enough to be his own faction?
I'm not saying
to be a faction you gotta have more than one dude.
No, in order to be a team or an army or something like that. But as far as sides, as far as entities at work, that Starscream is aligned with no one. I mean, he's a faction of one man, but he's a faction nonetheless. It's not like you have, like, this third team where, you know, like in Cybertron, you had, like, the mysterious Planet X guys who were all Decepticons and then revealed themselves, as far as I remember. I didn't watch much of Cybertron, but, like, there was, like, oh, Planet X. Like, you have all these guys that are, like, a secret faction of Decepticons that break away. It's like, you have lots of different players here, and they all have their own motivations. And, like, I thought maybe they would team up and actually become, like, a team. But, like, Starscream is still kind of his own player. I mean, I'm using faction in a very loose sense, but you...
I was meaning it more as team there.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Transformers, often we will use the word faction in a way that's not necessarily...
Well, what Aaron is saying is legit, but I was just trying to qualify what I was saying, but yeah.
Because
know,
she might even become the threat that has to be the, you know, that you get once in a series of, I guess we kind of already did, of, look, everybody's got to work together against this because it takes everything we can to knock one of these dudes down, and she now has 8,000 of them and just wants to get revenge on everybody else.
I'm about to blow your minds.
Okay, I'm holding my earphones down so that they don't leak out.
Guess who Arachnid totally is right now?
Who is Arachnid?
She's Kerrigan from StarCraft.
Yes.
The way she was sitting all sexy and had the Insecticon just kind of come up to her, the way her arms on her back resemble Kerrigan's kind of bone wings, like, and now she's basically like this monster insect queen. She's totally Cybertronian Kerrigan.
Did I mention this episode really reinforced that even though it's a deluxe, it doesn't look perfect, I kind of want, like, that Arachnid toy, like, now?
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't even discussed that on an episode proper yet.
I know. I'm just going to say it just because it's somewhat relevant here.
That
Arachnid toy and then, like, maybe 10 Voyager Insecticons would make for a really pretty shelf right about now.
Now, What's cool, though, is because we've seen the helicopter mode, we've seen the robot mode, but it's very obvious there is
something
things
else
we haven't
going
seen.
On.
There's joints in those blades that haven't even been used yet. I'm really hoping she has some form of a spider mode.
Even if she doesn't?
She has.
Or even,
I know,
body walker would be easy enough, I think.
Even if she somehow doesn't, those helicopter blades look like a part that someone who does add-on parts could play off of. Like
they have feet.
I know.
Like I don't see how they can be anything else other than I guess in the animation model they still kind of resemble feet at the tips of the blades, but otherwise, like, why would they have done that? There has to be a third mode on that, but
yeah.
And the other thing too, since I guess we're talking about Arachnid, like she during the fight with Dreadwing, he shot half of one of her legs off, and she never really recovered it. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if they're going to do like they did with Prime, how his blade remains broken for a while.
Yeah.
If she's just going to have that updated model with that piece missing for the foreseeable future.
I would be surprised.
Thing that I noticed and I paid attention to on my second watch through. Wow. Was as she was running, they animated the leg like she was still trying to use it.
Oh, I didn't notice that at all.
I'm pretty sure I caught that at one point because I was watching for it, and it looked like she was still trying to like limp along with that. And so I don't know if that's like
they had
their cycle animation and just deleted that part, or if that was something
intentional,
or if we're giving them a whole lot of credit.
I like the idea of animating the limp of a robot that is walking like a spider, because that's so many layers of having to think outside of the real life box.
Yeah.
But yeah. Arachnid was, I think, pretty cool in this episode. I like how, because I mean, it felt to me a bit easy to forget that she came to the show not really being a Decepticon, and that she kind of just joined their team at the last minute out of kind of necessity and convenience. So I like how quickly she went from like being a Decepticon first lieutenant, just being like, whatever, screw Decepticons, I got an insect army.
But the one thing that I didn't really pick up on or didn't justify in my head on the first watch through is it's like, why now? Like, why did Megatron just suddenly decide that, oh yeah, Arachnid, she wanted to betray me at the end of the last season, which has been many episodes by now. Yeah, I'm just going to decide that today's the day she dies. But the way that scene worked, set in my mind, I noticed it more the second watch, was it worked perfectly because her scene in the very opening bits of the episode was her showing the desire to want to recover the remaining Iacon artifacts.
Yeah.
And I think that was what decided to make Megatron make his move, is he now sees, he knows something she doesn't, which is he knows that she has the intention of stabbing him in the back. He's keeping her around long enough for her to be useful, but now that he sees her intentions starting to play out and her kind of dropping unintentional hints of what she eventually plans to do, then he's like, yeah, okay, now's the time. So I thought that was a clever way of subtly justifying his decision to finally take her out.
Especially with having a new person to be a competent right-hand man.
Yeah, that too. That plays in perfectly. That was kind of the theme, is it's like she's traitorous. She's now starting to show a bit of ambition. And now that I have someone to take her place as my lieutenant, and I loved that scene with Dreadwing at the end. He's like, you disobeyed my orders. You'll make a perfect first lieutenant, because look at what Starscream did, then Arachnid, and now finally Dreadwing. Like, yeah, you're falling right in line with the rest of them, buddy.
Also, that little profile close up on Megatron's head poking out of his vehicle mode.
Yes.
Totally reminded me of Scourge from the Transformers movie, like the 80s movie. Like, and I almost want to say that I saw some minor eyebrow animation when he was talking, but I'm not sure.
I wasn't sure about that either. I watched it and was like, is he going to wiggle? What's going on?
Yeah.
And
that should be the episode pick.
there was so much cool stuff going on with Arachnid's episode. I want to see where this goes. I also hope that she decides, like, especially her in particular, says, oh, hey, Mech, you're a bunch of humans. I don't like humans. I'm going to kill you if I come across you. Like,
yeah, and I really hope Arachnid and Mech do not re-team up again.
Yeah,
they have a history of doing that. So,
yeah.
I hope now that she decides that she has her bug army, who one-on-one can provide a challenge for Megatron, who is ostensibly the second most powerful character in this entire show, with an army of them, like, there's no reason for her to need to side with Mech. So I hope that she remains kind of her own thing with her own ambitions.
Yeah. Oh, this was another shaking of the status quo in multiple ways, and it's one that makes me so excited for new episodes, because, I mean, as you guys were basically saying, we have another new entity, another new rogue factor on the map of the show. And I love that. That's the kind of thing I enjoy. just quickly moving on from there, I wanted to just add a little thing. Man, you gotta feel bad for those Viacons. Like Megatron's like, I don't have to, I'm not honor bound. Yeah. Kill them! The whole trap, the whole reason there was a whole Mexican standoff, the Autobots don't even move, and they kill all of them. And I was like, oh man. Then Bulkhead even goes like, well, that sure was harrowing. And I'm like, dude, don't even, you can't lie to me. You
That one almost aimed towards
me. They had
me.
You outnumbered 20-1 on multiple levels of the higher ground. You guys just friggin' obliterated them off screen. Poor Viacons.
Yeah. And what really surprises me, sitting here dissecting it, how much have we even talked about the Autobots so far?
I mean, how much
were they in it?
Well, that's going to be my next topic.
Yeah.
Oh, well, fine then.
Yeah, there you go.
Shall we just
go on. Have it be your next topic. trying to make the conversation organic, and you just...
Well...
Hey, Gog Dog.
I'm not going to let you steal all my thunder, Aaron.
What's another thing you'd like to talk about?
I would like to talk about how I enjoyed a certain character on this show who I have, for the most part, actively disliked. And that is going to be Optimus Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the episode, RC had been complaining of the fact that Ratchet and Bulkhead let Starscream get away after they had helped him the first time, him basically allowing what happened to Bumblebee happen. Starscream shot his transformation cog, which, thankfully they were able to repair. And then him crawling back to them asking for help yet again. And her concerns were totally valid, but Optimus Prime taking the stance of we don't shoot helpless beings that are wounded and cannot defend themselves, and which is absolutely the stance that you should take and that this Optimus Prime should take, and is, like we've said before, that great contrast to the movie, like especially the beginning of Revenge of the Fallen, where he just executes the dude in his face when the guy can't even so much as move.
And you know what makes... Or what the reward is for that is when you get moments like when he just put his gun against Megatron's head.
Well, I'm getting there, buddy.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So that was, and I didn't even think that scene was setting up anything for later. It was just RC complaining, why didn't we take Starscream out? And Megatron and Prime saying, that's not what we do. But we also have what we saw from the end of the first season, where Prime has said enough is enough. Megatron is dangerous, and Megatron alone. Like, he didn't make the declaration to the entire Decepticons. He walked aboard the Decepticon ship and said, I want to have a one-on-one audience with Megatron. If you value your lives, you'll get out of my way. He gave them a chance to live, but he had made the declaration that Megatron was too dangerous. This was never going to end. This cycle of what he does and what he's done for apparently thousands of years. And I know I had made that comment before, like, now where does this place Prime? Because he's made that declaration. So now going forward, is it just going to reset? Is it going to, like, is it just going to be ignored later on, or is Optimus going to change as a character, having made that arc within himself, that decision, and that character growth, if that's the right word? So here we find in the same episode, after him taking that stance to his troops and telling them, no, that is not what you do, we now see Megatron wounded to the point to where he can hardly even walk anymore. And I love Megatron's line here because I think it helps accentuate what we saw in Rock Bottom with Jack, where Megatron just, I think we were all kind of not necessarily debating, but we were openly discussing, like, what was Megatron's motivation for telling Jack to just go ahead and run the drill through his head?
Yeah.
I think that this Megatron as a character is one that he has ambition. He wants the power, but when it comes time for him to meet his end, he looks it straight in the face unapologetically. If you're going to do it, you go ahead and do it, because I'm going to die on my terms and I'm not going to flinch. And so if you kill me, that's how you're going to remember me. And we see him now. He's not talking to a human. He's not talking to somebody that he can manipulate. He's talking to Prime, who's basically already put his foot down and saying, this is a dude that has to die for the sake of everyone on this planet and elsewhere. And Megatron, it's not even Prime who brings forth this dilemma. It's Megatron who looks Prime, I'm helpless, Prime, so just go ahead and do it. And you could certainly make the argument of him saying that, well, he knows Optimus is a quote-unquote better bot than he is and wouldn't make that decision. But I'm not so sure, having already had that encounter in near the season finale.
Season one's finale, there's it communicated something. Like, I mean, it communicated something very clear there.
I agree with that. And this is what I love, is this scene, Megatron basically telling Prime, go ahead and do it. I'm going to die on my terms. And if I do it, I'm going to be doing it looking you in the face. The rest of this scene was brilliant. We have Bumblebee, who looks over at Bulkhead, because this is their leader who had just made the declaration that this is not what they do. This goes against everything that they stand for. But here they are. Here is the leader of this evil force that Prime has already stated that it's over. Megatron has to die. If we want any semblance of peace, this dude has to die. He's said that in his own words. And they're looking at each other like, what is going to happen? And Prime, he doesn't utter a word for the rest of this scene. He just stares. He stares at Megatron. He just stares him down. And what does he do? He pulls out his gun. And he charges it. Doesn't immediately pull the trigger, but I have no doubt that that's what that is exactly what he would have done. He was forcing himself to do this because it goes against what he believes in, but he knows. They already stated they don't have the capacity to take prisoners. They don't have to do anything. If this would have been anyone other than Megatron, he would have never broken his weapon out or anything. If it wasn't for Dreadwing coming in at the last minute, Megatron would have been headless at that point. And it would have been something that I don't doubt on this character that would have laid heavily a burden on him, and something a decision he would have had to have struggled with for that point on. But I think that's the decision he's made, and we finally get to see what happened at the end of the last season bearing fruit. And I wonder if this is, you know, what's going to happen from this point on.
Well, it was
a terrific scene and a terrific bit of character growth. And I can't help but just like with Marty, how he built upon, like I said, with the whole Starscream scene of writers before him, I can't help but think that wasn't exactly what he was trying to convey, having been totally familiar with the episodes that have come before him.
That's the beauty of the way that they're playing this Prime, is that, as I was saying way back, it makes the fact that he makes a statement that, like, and he said it not just in this episode, but multiple times, we will not harm the helpless. And the fact that, like, he just coldly is ready to just, like basically the implication I get from it, like the way I like to think of it in my head, is like, we don't harm the helpless. Megatron is never helpless. Megatron is a dangerous thing that needs to be destroyed. And, and it's great because it's what was not in the movie. It's setting down a line of, like, who is worth, like, to Optimus Prime, the hero of heroes, who is worth putting his principles aside for.
Right.
And I love that it's actually a decision here, and it's not just what's expected out of the medium.
Like, right. And another bit of kind of reinforcing Prime's decision, what would have happened if they had killed Starscream? Who saved RC at the end?
Yeah.
Right.
His decision to spare Starscream allowed Starscream to save them in return. And so, you know, and that's not saying that Prime could predict the future, but his decision that Megatron is far more dangerous than anyone else is a correct decision. Because Starscream, while he is definitely treacherous and he has definitely killed innocent people, he is not the destructive force that Megatron is. And he's not the single-minded, anyone who's in my way is going to die. And it was interesting, for better or for worse, to see that decision bear fruit. Because if it wasn't for, and it wasn't Megatron's decision, I mean, it was obviously Ratchet and Bulkhead had made that decision, but it was Prime reinforcing that what they did was right. And we see that coincidentally or not, absolutely paid off for them in the end.
And it's getting across to me the really important idea in a show where the character death can happen and where characters are not just like, you know, open, at least in the jokey way that I like to talk about the movies, basically wanton murderers when they need to be. I think that it is really important to have that distinction and to make a deal out of who is too dangerous to live.
Yeah.
And in the eyes of our protagonists, like, and because I mean, that's a moral question even in real life. And I like to see that get made into a thing, even if it's subtle. Just like, of these characters who are virtuous fictional characters who will not kill the innocent or who will always try to strive to do the right thing, who are they going to say is too dangerous to live? And how can you do that in a way that makes that have weight rather than just be almost a vague plot hole? And I think that that's what's great about how, like, of all the things I've said about Optimus being kind of boring, I distinctly said in season one finale, that was a big moment when he stated that Megatron is too dangerous to live. Right. And I was so
afraid that was just going to disappear. And I'm super happy that it hasn't, at least to this, at least in this episode, we get to see that continue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was rewatching the scene a few times while you were talking. Yeah. It was a good time. What else is there to talk about in here? I'm totally fixated on the Megatron scene now. Aaron, you bring up something.
I don't know. I noticed a lot of good. I don't know if I necessarily want to say it's just Marty, but a lot of good speechcraft, kind of in the course of this episode, like Arachnid's taunting with the "I know we've not seen eyes to eye, but maybe we can patch things up."
And the wink.
And the wink, and then also the two or three "oh scrap" moments. Wasn't it like back to back? All the Viacons drop down, "oh scrap," and then RC hanging upside down, "oh scrap." There just a lot of excellent uses of language, and I don't know, a little bit of cunning wordplay and a little bit of the right timing. It's kind of looking at how the sausage is made parts of this, but I appreciate it that it's not that it's a place where something else entirely could have been in there, and it's a scrap of humor in this otherwise dark stuff.
Also, the banter, like that's an aspect of the banter. It ran real smooth. This episode was a whole lot of "oh my god, stuff is happening." I was just, while you were saying that, I was just thinking, like, was there even a lull point in this episode? The calmest moments of this episode I found were still pretty intense. Like, this was just a really intense, it was a really intense 20 minutes of cartoon. And, I think, like, the snappy writing really helps, but definitely, I think also just, like, this was some good TV cartoon writing for a palpable television show.
Yes.
And it felt really good to watch.
Yeah, I'm sitting here trying to think. I don't think that there was much slow at all.
Yeah. I honestly can't think of any real major slow moments that I actually can readily recall.
Yeah, even when the Autobots drop in on the fight, you know, the fight's going on and RC doesn't even wait to see how everything else susses out. She goes straight after Arachnid.
Yeah.
You know, that could have been a spot to slow the tempo a bit, but they said no. RC has but one point when she sees Arachnid, and that's take her down.
And there were multiple stages of, and I don't mean like sequential stages, there were multiple theaters of action going on.
Yeah.
At the same time, which meant that to cut away from one action sequence did not entail we're going to cut away to the non-action part. It meant we're going to cut to action scene two. Now we're going to cut to action, back to action scene one. By the way, action scene three is happening now over here. Like it was, it was really exciting to watch. And much like you guys, I don't want to just say like, and that's why Marty Eisenberg is the god of writing. But he is definitely brings something in here that like gives me good vibes too. And the other writers all have done pretty good jobs as well. Like I'm not trying to say Marty is the superstar that they're bringing in for the golden episodes, but he knows how to write cartoon, and it really came through in this one in multiple ways. The directing too, whoever just set this pace. This was a supremely well paced episode. I felt in my 1.5 viewings of it so far. Felt really good. When it was done, I wanted more, but not in a way that left me feeling negative. Like I felt like I'd had a full 3-course meal. And then I was really looking forward to the next time I come back to the steakhouse to have another full 3-course meal next weekend. Made an analogy to steak there, just for you.
Mm-hmm. I know. You didn't talk about how you do it wrong, though, so we're all okay.
Oh, yeah. You guys have covered a lot of my major points. Do either of you have anything else on your immediate list of things to bring up?
Not really. The wordsmithing was about all that I had because everything else just tied into those major points. It's the rough thing with the threads of each thing following through the whole episode. It's not like we got this bit, that bit, this bit. It seems like just about everything that went on in the first half of the episode had a reason in the second half of the episode.
Well, also, I don't know if you guys noticed this or if you listeners, you guys noticed this, but more than once, we didn't kind of like finish a topic and go like, all right, now you bring something up. Like we kind of just flowed because everything in this episode was relevant.
Yeah.
And that was another really, really well done part of, I think, of this episode.
Besides the humans, I think Knockout was the only character that like didn't show up. Like, and we didn't even see the humans, but like every single Autobot, I take that back. Wheeljack wasn't in this either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how much I still wonder how much Wheeljack is in the prime crew it's, versus
that's totally
just hanging out on
that's
Earth.
Totally explainable. Whatever. It's not even an issue.
I have a theory on this is more of a meta theory on why Knockout might not have been in the episode, but I think that working in a believable reaction for him to the most likely apparent death of Breakdown would have actually made the episode too full because it was already moving at such a perfect clip.
Yeah.
I think that it was necessary to leave him out, provided that he does have at least a line about it in the next two episodes at some point.
The only thing that I really wanted to bring up is Dreadwing and his sense of honor. I like how that is becoming an established part of his character. He's 100% loyal to Megatron, but he's also a dude that you can take at his word. That doesn't mean he's not going to kill you, but you're going to know that he's going to kill you.
Yeah.
And the fact that he is willing to put down his weapon just for the sake of keeping his word, and of course, you know, Megatron wasn't even deceitful. He just simply said like, well, you didn't have my word, which was again, totally honest. But I like how like in each one, like, and it was almost as if Dreadwing was repaying them for the previous episode because like Dreadwing was in a situation and they're like, look, if you let us out of this situation, you'll go with your life. And he basically gave the Autobots the same position back. So, like, I don't know. I like that. And I like the fact, I like bad guys with honor. And so, I mean, that doesn't mean that Dreadwing's not a bad guy, but I like the fact that I'm getting to, that he has his own unique character traits and that even though he's only been in two episodes, I kind of feel like I know Dreadwing to a point.
And I
like the dude.
Yeah. So, I had an interesting reaction to him myself.
I like bad guys with traits that you can relate to or like to or latch on to. So far I think Dreadwing in the two episodes he's been on, is a decent member of the cast so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had this really odd reaction to him in this episode because my knee-jerk reaction was, oh man, Dreadwing didn't do much for this episode. But then I stopped and it's like, no, wait. The only reason why I'm thinking that is because I'm also thinking he's the new character. Why isn't he getting all kinds of weird spotlight out of nowhere? But he was just like worked right into the cast. And I think that like upon thinking about it afterwards, I was like, no, wait, he did do lots. I just pretty much took it all for granted and at face value. Like, no, he didn't feel like a foreign entity that I was trying to ease into my experience of the show. So I was very much enjoying the idea that I think you put it pretty well that I already know him this quickly as a character. So just a really nice episode. I really enjoyed that, and I am jazzed for next week's. Do you guys have anything else about Crossfire you want to bring up?
Not really.
Okay. I want to share my theory now. We're going to talk about stuff that is seen in the trailer for the next episode. So, if you have avoided knowing what the next episode is about, then continue doing so and avoid the internet until the weekend, because you're in a blessed position, my friend. Just shut this podcast off and maybe come back to it after next week to see how completely wrong I probably am. But I'll give you a couple seconds. All right, now I'm going to talk about this theory. So, we see in the trailer for the next episode that the next episode is called Nemesis Prime. And it has this other Optimus with this awesome, creepy, like, low-toned voice. Now, here's my theory, and this is not just grasping at straws. This is like reaching for straws that are floating in space. But that Nemesis Prime has eyes that are the same color as Breakdown's. If I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I got. I'm not saying that means Breakdown's alive or that he's Nemesis Prime, but all I'm saying is there is an avenue in there that to me is a clear tie to Breakdown somehow. What that clear tie is, we'll have to see next, maybe not even next week. We might not even find out about it till much later, but that to me was, spoke out to me as an indicator that Breakdown will, at least in terms of his parts, have some presence next week.
Well, it was his eyes and his gun were yellow.
Oh, I didn't catch that his gun was yellow as well.
And Prime's blast, because it shows cuts back and forth between what I believe to be Nemesis and Optimus, however they want to call it, is they show yellow eyes, yellow gun blast, and then show that one doing damage, and then they show a blue-eyed, blue-gunned Prime popping his blasters a couple times and maybe running at this other Prime. But I don't know. That's all the wonders of editing that you can do for a teaser that may not be things that actually happen.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Because my speculator twitch just like set off like a plague at that moment. I was like, what if this is Breakdown's character development? Is that he suddenly now is the... He's become Nemesis Prime, like in the metafiction, he's gone from being a thug to being the anti-Optimus Prime that we often get in toys, but not necessarily always get in media. And I certainly am not expecting that to happen in some kind of indignant entitlement way, like, don't get me wrong. But I felt there was a small thing in there, and it led me to create this little theory of mine. So that's my theory. Are you guys having any thoughts about this Nemesis Prime episode? Because this one already had lots of game changers. Nemesis Prime looks like it will be another game changer episode to me.
Yeah, especially with the preview text, I think, for 35, which is the episode after Nemesis Prime, talks about fallout with Fowler. And this episode looks like it's got a lot of Fowler dealing with issues. So I like the fact that they're continuing to rather roll everything together from one to the next and see how things take us and make it all work.
As long as we get more helicopters and jet plans.
I'm telling you, Fowler just, well, he was driving a car earlier. See, he's getting smarter. He's not.
Oh, it was a black car, too. Maybe that's going to be another new Transformer. Who knows? Gog, you got any feelings on the preview for the next episode, or are you just gonna ride it out?
No. I mean, the only thing I have to say is this is going to be the closest Mech has come to realizing the only thing we know is their end goal. Mm-hmm. So I hope that when this happens, and I hope this for some, and I don't think this is going to happen, but I hope that this isn't like, okay, here it is. This is the final Mech thing. They finally reached their goal. Yeah. And then like their machination gets destroyed. They're taken into custody and then we don't see Mech anymore. Like that's the worst case scenario. Like I would like to see, this is their first time where they've gotten to play around with this sort of stuff and have gotten it to work. And I mean, outside of that, I have no speculation or hopes and dreams of what Mech does. But I think, and I've said this before, like Mech has been the closest thing we've had to an ongoing overall plot in Prime, and or at least the best realized one of that. And the fact that every time Mech comes on, we get to see them inch closer and closer and closer. And it's just been not necessarily unpredictable or considerably deep, it's still very much a serialized plot going on that every single time they're on continues to advance and go forth. So
absolutely.
I hope that Mech at some point becomes a very viable threat to anyone who is not aligned with them at some point, be it Autobot, Decepticon, that's really, I don't really have any speculation. I just hope that it doesn't go down that route. And I have no reason to believe it will, but that's the only thing that's really come into my mind as far as this goes.
And that's also kind of a scarier enemy as somebody that's not just big and bad, but somebody that's slowly built up.
Well, they're also the first cross season, major serialized plot thread. There are cross-season serialized plot threads, but of the ones that are major high-stakes plot threads that have yet to hit their absolute peak, I think they are the only cross-season ones so far, aside from Dark Energon, which I do not think has been... Like, Mech has been far more active as a plot point.
Yeah.
And I think that they are definitely, like, they are the cross-season plot point right now. So... combined with how much I think this episode was effective actually does give me a little bit of like kind of butterflies. Cause I'm like, I am totally setting myself up for disappointment only because I am now coming up with all these reasons why I think the next episode could be awesome. So I'm trying to like reel it back a little bit. Cause I always hate it when I hate the reaction, especially when I have it, of, oh, that last episode was so good that it made this next one not look as good as it could have been.
Yeah.
And that's always a bummer. Because, like, the next episode might have a different writer even. Like you, though, I very much hope that the next episode is not the conclusion of Mech. I hope it's Mech taking just a big plot step forward. And once again, reshuffling the status quo, if possible. The only other thing I've got to add is, I may as well share this because it's kind of relevant.
I have one small thing when you're done too.
Okay, well, let's do yours because mine's really, really veering away from topic.
It's inconsequential. It's something I remembered and I wanted to bring up, but I wonder if anybody else thought this, but when we see the whole thing in the beginning with Starscream kind of crawling around like on his knees looking for the little bits of Energon.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear in here, the first thing I thought of is like, whoa, Skyquake. Did anybody else think that?
No, I didn't think of that at all.
I thought like, wow, somehow he came back. Like, I don't, and it, obviously that wasn't anywhere near close to the truth, but like that was the first thing I'm like, Because it like that sound like and the slow plodding footsteps, like it sounded like zombie Skyquake, and yeah. I was like, oh wow, like they are bringing everybody into this episode. But I don't know. I thought that was funny, but I wonder if there's anybody else out there that was their first thought, because you see the shadow and you just hear tchun tchun,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, snap, Skyquake is back.
That would also be everyone except Knockout, who I'm going to talk about just for a sec, because we got a reply from Ryoku, in the episode 192 thread, hoping it's in time for discussion on Knockout. We didn't discuss Knockout in episode 193, so let's talk about him now, just for a sec. Unicronic on TFW got a Knockout and has messed with the transformation, and like we all were hoping, has found that there was another part that moves that nobody else had found. Apparently the center of the car hood, which is the crux of everything, but a majority of the complaints about Deluxe Knockout we've had so far in photos that I've seen, is that, you know, the center hood piece just isn't fitting in with the aesthetic, and it's preventing the front fender bits from becoming shoulder pads. Apparently the center part pulls out and slides down, not fenders, wheel arches, and it allows those parts to form something that looks a lot more like the show. There's a photo in there that makes me a lot more excited to get a hold of Knockout, because I had a feeling that center panel, I was like, it has to move another way. Guess what, it totally did. So thank you, Unicronic, who I'm guessing is the first person to find that joint on the internet. Anyway, I wanted to point that one out because I'm on a Prime kick right now and kind of
need
maybe
more.
Have a Knockout on the way.
Maybe. It's Schrodinger's Knockout.
It's a Schrodinger's Knockout. I'm so happy about this photo because, I mean, I wasn't feeling quite as against the Knockout toy as most other people, but I really had trouble denying a GOG. You made a tweet a while ago, which was that, why is it that every photo of Knockout somehow makes him look more like junk rather than, you know, like the first photo we got was the Hasbro photo, and that's supposed to be the worst photo we get.
Yeah.
And it got worse and worse. Did you see this new photo?
Yeah, it definitely looks noticeably better for sure.
Yeah, like now he has.
I didn't realize it was going to make as big a difference as it did, but when I saw the whole bumper around the waist, like, I saw in a few pictures that looked to be a hinge, and I was hoping that there was something else going on there, but it definitely made more of a difference than I expected. So I look forward to some more shots at more angles.
Yeah.
Because I want to see what he looks like like that from all angles. Because I've seen him from all angles mistransformed, and it doesn't look great. And so yeah. I want to see what that looks like overall. And if he looks noticeably better, that's going to be a relief for me, because I want at least a passable Knockout toy. And
yeah.
Everything I've seen of this so far has been unpassable.
I think given what I'm seeing in this photo, it solves the problem with every other photo, which is every other photo, he didn't have a cohesive humanoid shape. And
right,
fixing,
it was weird, blocky upper body.
And, yeah, and there were disconnects. Like his shoulders didn't really like smoothly transition into his shoulder blades, which didn't smoothly transition into his torso and neck. Now that chest thing is fixed, and now that the bumpers are folded back, he's got a defined upper body, and he's got a defined midsection into a defined pelvis. And I think it's that whole thing of like, now that the silhouette's there, the whole thing makes more sense. I mean, I do think it's, I wish his elbows and forearms were not quite so off kilter, but that's also, it looks like just a factor of what happens when you have that much window and door turn into forearms.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all just off a photo. Once this guy is in hand, I am going to actively try to make this toy look better. Like if this is what it has to be, look better than it actually is, because Knockout is a great design who deserves to look good. Anyway, that's also wildly off topic, but I had to talk about it because I'm so happy now.
You know what? It's perfectly on topic because it's our friggin' show.
Yeah, that's right. Start something. Anyway, we've been going at this for, we cleared the 1 hour 20 mark. So I'm feeling like this is a nice solid prime time. Myself. Anything else you guys want to add? I mean, overall, I think we clearly all dug Crossfire in some way.
So, yeah.
Props.
Waiting for the next one now.
Yeah. High fives to you guys working on Prime for this episode. I mean, granted, I'm sure you guys need our spoken word digital indication of we would give you a high five. I'm sure that's making this all totally worth it. But I'm also curious how much more work Marty's going to do on the show. I'm going to be keeping
every other episode. I'm asking for it right now.
Seven. We're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 episodes in, and Marty's done 2. That's pretty good.
Yeah. That's the, like, if he does at least one more, even if he only does, if he does no other ones, whatever. It's still really awesome. If he does one more, Trinity of Marty will be achieved. So, let's hope. In the meantime, thank you, Gog and Aaron, for joining me once again. Thank you all out there who are listening for chilling out with us to talk about Prime again. We will be back next week to talk about some nemesizing. And until then, we shall be
Prime out!
Yes. What the
f***?
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.